Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 168. I'm recording it on Sunday, September 20th, 2009. The P10 level today is 19. That's not too exciting for stock investors. The title of the musical selection is Crazy Copper. The title of the podcast is Inadvertent Financial Fraud: What It Is, What It Signifies. What we have here, the entire great safe withdrawal rate debate, the campaign of terror against the retire early and indexing discussion board communities, and in recent months against the personal finance blogosphere in general. We have a political issue disguised as an economic slash investing issue. In other words, the issue is usually presented. I post the personal finance blogs. And of course, the retire early community deals with investing issues, and so does the indexing community. And the sorts of issues we talk about, what is the safe withdrawal rate? What's the amount that we can withdraw from our retirement portfolios according to the historical data? What should our stock allocation be? Are stocks, are bonds more risky or are stocks more risky? What is the expected long-term return of stocks at various price levels? All of these questions present themselves as economic slash investing questions, numbers questions, money questions, right? But they're really not. They appear to be that. And certainly, it's certainly we need to discuss those aspects, the substantive aspects of the debate, and many of the podcasts are directed to that. But what we really have here is a political debate. It's not an economic slash investing debate. It's a political debate. The way I used to phrase it a lot in the early days of the discussions, I used to say we're not having a debate about how to invest or how to retire. We're having a debate about having a debate. In other words, the question from the first day has been, may these questions be raised? Are we permitted? We have something called the First Amendment that applies in the United States, the right to free speech, yet it's a historical fact that a fellow named Rob Bennett, an extremely popular poster at Motley Fool, put up a post on the morning of May 13th, 2002, asking a question, do valuations affect long-term returns and therefore safe withdrawal rates, the numbers we use to plan our retirements? Does the number we use to plan our retirement, do they change with changes in valuation levels? And the answer of the community was threefold. One, this is a very exciting question. That there's never been as much discussion on any money-related topic, I don't believe, in the history of the internet. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of posts have been directed over the past 7 years at over a dozen discussion board and blog communities. Well, not over a dozen, dozens of them, scores of them, really, if you counted every blog. So there's been huge interest in the question. Two, there's been much positive feedback. We've had hundreds of wonderful contributors who have helped out and helped us develop our ideas and our insights. And three, we've had vicious, brutal attacks, including threats of physical violence, if the discussions were to continue, if we were to explore the implications of what we have learned. Well, resulting in a ban on honest posting at all retire early boards and all indexing discussion boards as of today, and at a number of personal finance blogs. And that ain't investing. That's not an investing question. It's not like there's a difference of opinion about a number, or There's a difference of opinion about a strategy. That's not what's going on. What we have is a political dispute. So, as the debate continues, I expect it's going to become more political. And, of course, we're seeing political ramifications in the real world. What we're seeing today is the economic slash investing question was raised on May 13th, 2002. Because of these, you know, these political tactics, discussion was thwarted. It continued in some form. It's never stopped. The debates have continued, and the positive progress has continued. But the the flack has also continued, so that the impact of our insights that we've developed has been limited because of the flack and the political fallout. But the final result, well, not the final result, but the result of that was we had a stock crash. Now, it could be we would have had a stock crash of some sort regardless, but it certainly would have been a very different situation had all this been publicized when we first learned of it. And I don't mean to say that the first time anyone learned that valuations affect long-term returns was on May 13, 2002. We learned that when Robert Shiller did his research back in 1981, 28 years ago. So, you know, I certainly don't mean to take credit for this, but I just happened to stumble into the whatever you want to call it, the quote-unquote controversy. It's a crazy sort of controversy, but I happened to just stumble into it not knowing what I was doing. So ultimately, because these issues, because we never told the middle-class investors who were going to suffer busted retirements, they were getting, we had many, many, many people writing into, you know, magazines and newspapers and saying, look, this doesn't really make sense to me, this passive investing. I'm hearing passive investing everywhere I go, stocks for the long run, buy and hold, timing doesn't work, you know, blah, 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 blee, blee, blee. But it doesn't really make sense to me. I'm nervous. I've got this money in stocks and, you know, it's my retirement money. It's important. And people are saying you don't need to change your stock allocation, but prices are really high. And it just, I don't know. It doesn't seem quite right to me. I consider price, everything else I buy, what is so different about stocks? And the experts were saying, oh, no. You know, this is all academic research. It's all proven. There's no need to worry. Just keep that stock. Keep that stock allocation. Just don't change it. And then we had a stock crash because of this. Because we irresponsibly told people they don't need to change their stock allocations when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. We acted recklessly as a people. We acted irresponsibly. We acted imprudently. We acted foolishly. We acted shamefully, I think it's fair to say. Shamefully. We acted, I said it was shamefully. So, you know, that made it, that clearly brought on political implications because, you know, just in very obvious ways it affected the election. Not that it changed the result, but if there, you know, it clearly Bush was in a lot of trouble before the crash, and after the crash, he was in more trouble than before. But it's also affected the first year of the Obama presidency. It's sort of a dark cloud. He's had a lot of trouble with his healthcare initiative. One of the big problems is that a lot of people, I think it's the simple explanation of the political problem he faces. There's a lot of detailed things you can look at, but the simple thing is, what many people feel is fix the economy, then talk about healthcare. So this economic black cloud, which was caused by the reckless promotion of passive investing for 28 years after we had learned from the academic research that it could not work in the real world. If valuations affect long-term returns, it obviously makes precisely zero sense to stay at the same stock allocation, regardless, you know, when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. That obviously makes no sense. So, there are those sorts of political ramifications, and we are seeing damage to the fabric, you know, of our democracy. I mean, let's not overstate it, but we're seeing bad stuff. And the reasons why the issue is not being addressed, the reasons why the issue is not being resolved, there's more than one. It's not a simple matter, but it's primarily political in nature. Not political Democrat versus Republican, not that sort of political, but political in the sense of people aren't trying to solve the economic issues or the investing issues. There is no intellectual dispute here. I've been involved in these discussions on a daily basis for over 7 years, and never, that I can recall, never has anyone, we've had bannings left and right, you know, threats of physical violence, all this sort of thing, never can I recall any passive investing advocate making a reasoned argument that valuations do not affect long-term returns. I don't ever recall that happening. So this isn't a substantive debate. It's an attempt to shut down discussions so that middle class people cannot learn the realities of stock investing. Keep it from them. And no one can say with precision what the motive is, because you can't get into people's heads. But I think it's fair to say that a big part of it is that the stock selling industry has made hundreds of millions of dollars promoting passive investing. And it doesn't want to have to reverse its positions. It doesn't want to, you know, give up the marketing benefits. It seems inarguable to me that that's a factor, a big factor. So that's political. It's not that they're saying, passive is better than rational, or, you know, we don't really know whether passive has problems or not, or, you know, the jury's out on the efficient market theory. There are all sorts of articles. I mean, I think I've seen 40 or 50 of them in the past year saying that the efficient market theory is nonsense. That's the intellectual framework for passive investing. These articles have been published in all sorts of places, big name publications. I'm going to do an article at the website where I just put links to a whole bunch of them. Investing links I'm not supposed to tell you about. It's my tentative title. But, there's scores of them. Big name publications. New York Times, Washington Post, just Wall Street Journal. I mean, everywhere. Business Week, Time, The Guardian, all sorts of places. So, but they don't discuss, part of it is just inertia, part of it is just that people haven't put the pieces of the puzzle together. There's no question that's a big factor here. And I hope that that's going to resolve itself in time, but I hope soon. But there's no question that I don't at all mean to impugn everyone who has failed to act, that somehow they're all involved in some big conspiracy. But a big factor is there is this social taboo that we will not question passive investing because so much money has been put into it and so many big name people have their reputations involved in promoting this discredited investing model. And so there has been, there are cases I can cite that I've dealt with that were just obvious. One that comes to mind is this fellow, Bill Schultheis, who's the author of The New Coffee House Portfolio. A nice guy, as far as I can tell, certainly seems to be, who I interacted with at the Get Rich Slowly blog, and I invited Bill to get into some discussions about the problems with passive investing, and he expressed enthusiasm. He looked at my site, and he said, "Holy Toledo, this is amazing." He's very excited about what he found there. And then he found out that Mel Lindauer had imposed a ban on honest posting on these questions, and all of a sudden, Bill Schultheis has very little interest in having a discussion about what we've learned over the last 7 years. And yet, he continued to ask questions over at Bogleheads.org. So I think he has a genuine interest in learning. He wants to learn, I do believe. But he doesn't want to take on the attacks that are going to be dished out to anyone who looks at the question seriously. So he's asking at bogleheads.org where, you know, surprise, surprise, honest posting has been banned. So he's obviously not going to hear straightforward answers to his questions. He's going to hear, you know, BS for the most part. With a few people trying to get in some straight talk at the edges, but then being met by the Lindauer goons in the event that they do speak too frankly about what the problems are. So we're dealing with a political issue, and there's a very sensitive aspect to it, and that's the ethical question, because there are ethical questions here. This is what makes this also shocking to me, or at least it did in the early days. I still am shocked. But in the early days, if you ever had ever told me that there was even a 1 in 1,000,000 chance that honest posting on the numbers people use to plan their retirements would be banned on the internet, I would have said, no, that could never be. That's impossible. Even one place, if you had told me there was going to be a ban at one place on the internet, I would have said no. If you had told me there was going to be one person who would threaten physical violence to anyone who posted honestly on that question, I would have said it's impossible. And yet, I've seen bans at close to 15 places now, and I've seen threats of physical violence endorsed by hundreds and tolerated by thousands. In other words, if you go to boards where threats of physical violence were used to keep people in line, there were times where there would be a post that, you know, you could click, you know, recommend it. And we've had hundreds of people recommend such threats. And we've had thousands sit on their hands and do nothing. Tolerate them. We've had big name entities like Motley Fool and Morningstar and IndexUniverse.com. You know, adopt bans. Do nothing. You know, sit there while these threats played out and do nothing. Money Magazine, I informed Money Magazine there were no threats in the publication, but they wrote an article about bogleheads.org, and I informed them of the history of that board, how it was founded to escape Morningstar, because Morningstar would not ban honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation questions. And Money Magazine, you know, the editor that I wrote to, chose to just ignore that. Not, you know, to go ahead and recommend, endorse, link to the bogleheads.org board, despite its history, despite the reasons for its founding. So there are ethical questions here. We have millions of people who are going to suffer busted retirements in the event that stocks perform in the future, anything at all, as they've always performed in the past. And we've already had the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States, and we have the second biggest economic crisis in the United States history, with the potential, I think the likelihood, of another stock crash coming in you know, not the not-too-distant future, within a few years, which could make this the worst economic crisis in history, possibly worse than the Great Depression. And the information we need to turn things around, we need to give middle-class investors straight talk about how investing works in the real world is banned. Everywhere I've tried to post, and if you know of a place where there's, you know, there will be a positive reception to this message, please tell me. I've written, as I say, Money Magazine I've written to. I've, you know, posted at Morningstar. I've posted at Motley Fool. I've posted at Early Retirement Forum. I've posted at IndexUniverse.com. I've taken this a lot of places. Get Rich Slowly blog. Lots and lots of places. Lots of big name places. Lots of small name places. And if there's any I've missed, please just let me know and I'll do what I can. Or take it there yourself. But, you know, we've got a problem, Houston. And it's an ethical problem. And it's more than just, it's not only an ethical problem, but it is an ethical problem. There is an ethical dimension to this question. No question about it. Now, I think the ethical aspect is a big aspect, because the situation we get into over and over again is that, as I say, it's a debate about having a debate. So often, you know, I think that if we were trying to resolve these matters in a civil and reasoned way, they could be resolved in really a no time flat. There are certain things we know for sure, and there should be universal agreement on those things. There are other things we don't know for sure that are, you know, very much in the dark, and those things, of course, you know, we should just continue to study, but we can't answer. And there are things where some people believe one thing strongly and others believe another thing strongly, and in those cases we follow the usual procedure of just getting along with each other. We agree to disagree. We, you know, one person or one group of people supports passive investing, another group supports rational investing, and the logical thing to do is just present both cases in a civil and reasoned way and let people make up their own minds. But that's not at all what's ever happened anywhere. We're seeing signs, like at the Get Rich Slowly blog, we're getting closer to that. There was a nasty, nasty thread there, the one that Schulthess appeared on. It was his article that kicked off that thread, and that ended up with 450 comments, and a lot of them, hundreds of them, by members of the Grainy Goons. Nasty stuff. Defamation, intimidation. And J.D. Roth did not act, the owner of the blog. But today, J.D. Roth is allowing honest posting on several threads. I have posted, and he's allowed it. And so that's, you know, that's good. That's good. So maybe we're seeing some change. And I've seen that at other blogs as well. Maybe we're seeing some change. And we've certainly seen change at Bogleheads. You know, let's be fair. There's been improvement there since the crash. So, we've seen some change. We've seen some positive change. But we obviously aren't where we need to be. We're not, you know, there's still a lot of intimidation. People who post that passive investing is nonsense still are subject to a lot of social disapproval and a lot of hostility and intimidation. And it's uncalled for and it's inappropriate and it needs to change. And there are still bans in effect at numerous places. Bans on honest posting on these questions. And these are ethical questions. Because the stakes here are as big as they could be. The primary thing we're talking about is whether we can post honestly on the numbers we use to plan our retirements, the safe withdrawal rate studies, which are used by financial planners all over the United States and elsewhere. And if these numbers are wrong, and the evidence that they're wrong is a mountain. I mean, just a mountain of evidence. There's zero evidence that they're right. Nobody's ever presented anything. In 7 years, no one's ever presented anything. Leading passive investing advocates like Larry Swedrow says the old school studies are, what do they call them? Was it junk in? Yeah, junk in, junk out research, something like that, or trash in, trash out research. I mean, he's basically calling it trash research. The research that we're using to plan our retirements. Trash. Not according to a rational investing advocate, according to a passive investing advocate. And he's not the only one saying that. There are others. Bill Bernstein, another passive investing advocate, said, you know, anyone thinking of using these studies to plan a retirement should forget about it. And again, not the only one. There are others. So there's really no dispute on the, I mean, there are matters that are under dispute on the substance, but the key questions are not under dispute. The key questions are valuations affect long-term returns. I mean, I just don't know that there's a, you know, our state of knowledge on that, our state of certainty is as strong as our certainty the moon is not made of green cheese. It's just clear as clear can be. And if valuations affect long-term returns, it's impossible for the rational human mind to figure out why you would not want to change your stock allocation. When valuation levels dramatically changed, what would be the motive? But passive investing says no. So the damage being done is very, very serious. Very, very serious. And these aren't, one, you know, that we're dealing with people's retirements, so, and we're dealing with the economic and political system of the United States. We're not dealing with one retirement, we're dealing with millions. And when millions of people's retirements are put in jeopardy, the economic structure of the country is put at risk, and ultimately the political structure because of the political friction that develops when our economy is destroyed. So we're dealing with, you know, the biggest questions you could be dealing with. And as I say, then we're dealing with an issue that is a number. We're not dealing really with matters of opinion. There is opinion that comes into it down the road. But the basic questions are questions of numerical calculations. Either the old school studies look at all the factors, including valuations, or they don't. And the reality is, the studies, you know, they're you can check them. They're in the public record. They include they say the safe withdrawal rate's the same at all valuation levels. There's obviously no adjustment. And the historical data is public data. It's not secret data. It's out there in the public. So what we're dealing with here is a political question, not an economic or primarily. There's all sorts of interesting economic / investing questions that come into play once you decide to explore these questions, which is what, you know, I did a long, long time ago. But the ultimate question of whether the results of these explorations can be discussed publicly, that's a political question. And the, you know, many, many passive investing advocates have said, no, these questions simply may not be discussed. And yet, they're imperiling people's retirements by censoring these discussions. So, the question comes up about the ethical ramifications here. And I think it's a very big question. I think there are a number of reasons why we've had a taboo on discussion of this. It's not only the ethical questions, but the ethical part is a big part of it. I think it's one of the reasons why, as I say, if we just discuss things in good faith, all of this could be cleared up in no time at all. You know, as long as you're dealing with responsible people, and most of the people we're dealing with are responsible. Perhaps you can't say that of the goons, but, you know, people like John Bogle and Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and Jonathan Clements, these are responsible, you know, good people. So obviously we could work things out if just we could discuss. But the rule has been it can't be discussed. It's considered like, you know, it's a nuclear bomb to allow middle class people to know how wrong passive investing is, how much damage it has done, and how long the academic research has told us this is considered. It's the equivalent of a nuclear bomb drop, you know, in investo world. It's just so, and I think part of the reason is that I always use the phrase, I say, what we need is for these people to learn how to say the three magic words, I and was and wrong. And I do think that's true. But I think part of the reason why they can't do that is, and there is more than one reason. One reason they have a hard time doing it, I believe, is because the mistake is so basic. Not that they're dumb. They're not dumb. But, you know, it's sort of like, was it dumb to think that the Earth was flat? You know, today people think that was dumb, but it wasn't dumb at the time people thought it. Well, the same thing's true with passive investing. It's once you see through it, once you see through the arguments for passive investing, it does seem dumb to think that passive investing could ever work. But when you are a passive investor, it doesn't seem dumb at all. It's just, it's obvious. You say, yeah, the world, of course, it's flat. Whoever said it, how could it be anything different? I look, it's flat. My eyes tell me it's flat. My eyes tell me everybody's rational. Market's efficient. Passive works. But it's hard to admit that you're wrong about something so basic, so obvious. That's a big part of it. But a second part is, I think, people are aware that there are ethical questions here. You know, you're destroying people's lives, and it's been going on for 30 years. And so people are, you know, I can't admit that. And if they could admit it for themselves, they don't want to admit it for all their friends in the industry. So we have to discuss that. And I've always felt this. I felt this going back a long, long, long time. We have to discuss the ethical aspects. But of course, I've always been aware it's sensitive. And I've always tried to be cautious because if it's handled poorly, you can cause more trouble instead of healing wounds. And yet, You know, so part of me would say, well, you know, you need to be very gentle, which I think is true. On the other hand, you can't be so gentle. What I've seen with a lot of people, a lot of good, smart people who understand that valuations affect long-term returns, is they try to be so gentle as to not say that the studies get the numbers wrong. And if you do that, you perpetuate the problem. In other words, if we can't come forward and say, look, the numbers in this study are wrong, what the heck, you know, how the heck are we ever going to get to first base in learning how investing works in the real world? If you can't even tell, report what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates. But many people have said that. They've said, Rob, just, you know, don't mention it. Just let it be. You can't have a retire early board or an indexing board and not warn your fellow community members that there are studies out on that affecting retirement that get all the numbers wrong. Not a little bit wrong, a lot wrong. So we can't go that far. However, I do believe, and I believe this fairly strongly, we have to be careful about how far we go because it can make things worse. You know, we're dealing with political dynamite. Dealing with political dynamite. We're changing the history of investing in a very, very, very positive way. Changing it from night to day. You know, we have a model today that gets all the answers wrong and sends us in the wrong direction and causes economic catastrophe. And we're moving to a system that I think has great promise. I can't say what it's going to do, but I believe it's going to usher in the golden age of middle class investing. I believe that. But it needs to be tested. I mean, we need to have thousands of people looking at it and seeing. You know, it needs to withstand scrutiny more than, you know, the number of people who have looked at it so far, which is not a small number. We've taken these ideas to the Vanguard Diehards board and the Motley Fool board, you know, during the time when before the ban was imposed at those places. And we've gotten lots of positive feedback. But we need a lot more. I mean, we need millions of people looking at it, really. So these are very delicate questions. Now, I've tried to deal with the ethical questions on at least two earlier podcasts. One was called Investing Ethics and Oxymoron, and one was called It's Not a Conspiracy, It's Cognitive Dissonance. And I felt that I did a good job in those two, so I recommend that you listen to those two if you're interested in this aspect of the question. But I felt that we were due for another discussion because my sense of where things are going is that we're entering a more overtly political stage of the debate. Since I did not think of this as a political debate prior to the stock crash, I thought of it as a, you know, something within the personal finance community. Once upon a time, I've always tried to keep this as small as possible. You know, originally it was just the Motley Fool Retire Early Board. That was it. And I didn't want to go beyond that because I felt it embarrasses people. You know, people have behaved poorly, I think it'd be fair to say. And it embarrasses them, you know, to go to the, you know, say to go to Vanguard Diehard. So I held off for years. But eventually, you know, you have to do what you have to do. We have to get the word out, certainly. So we had to do that. And then again, I was very reluctant to go to the personal finance blogosphere again, because I, you know, you don't want to embarrass people. And people have behaved poorly, and it's going to come out. But again, I felt that we were ultimately left with no options. Today, since the crash, it's clear the political ramifications have become very clear. That, and certainly since this healthcare debate, you see that this crash, the passive investing stock crash of 2008, is causing damage to our political system, and of course, damage to our economic system, beyond question. So it's getting more and more political, and we're seeing that. I really, you know, at every stage, as we took it to somebody new, I always felt they're going to take responsible action. You know, when I originally felt we went to Motley Fool, we would take responsible action. Then I said, well, I'll go to the owners, the site administrators. And that didn't do it. And I was amazed. I said, when we go to Vanguard Dyer, that's going to do it. You know, Morningstar will step in. And then I thought, you know, Money Magazine would step in, whoever. And I certainly thought the personal finance blogosphere was going to step in. But we see similar reactions in all these places. And so I think it's fair to conclude that all of these entities have ties, at least, to the stock selling industry. Even the personal finance blogosphere, where you would think there would be journalistic independence, many of the owners of personal finance blogs don't want to know the realities of stock investing. They want to promote passive investing because it from a marketing standpoint, it works. It's disaster in terms of stock returns, but it works great marketing. It appeals to that get-rich-quick impulse, and it, you know, you make money or you get links or, you know, whatever it is. You develop fame, whatever it is. You sell whatever, books or whatever, calculators. It works from that standpoint. Or maybe people are just embarrassed. They've promoted passive investing. They don't want to admit they were wrong. And of course, there's a lot of confusion. Some people really don't know. But, you know, whose fault is that? The material's available to anyone who cares. You know, it's all public information. I don't charge to read the material at my site. So it's there for them. And I invite them. And I invite them to ask questions. I'm always willing to answer questions to the extent I'm able. But there's a reluctance. So there really are ethical questions, and I think that's one of the big problems we have. That you know, people don't want to admit that. People don't want to say, first of all, they don't want to say I have behaved unethically, and secondly, they don't want to say my friends have behaved unethically. Everybody wants to cover it up. But if you cover it up, you can't discuss investing in a realistic way. Because the thing that's wrong isn't some little, calculation somewhere. It's the entire passive investing model. It's the entire idea that you don't need to adjust your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. That's the whole model. That's the basic premise. It's the efficient market theory. If the efficient market theory is wrong, everything or 90% of what we've been told about stock investing for the past 30 years is wrong. So, We have this really sensitive, difficult issue of ethical questions, and at the same time, we absolutely have to deal with it because we can't move forward if we don't. So I've always felt we need to discuss this matter, but I have always felt that we need to discuss it prudently, carefully, and my preference would be we would have discussions with some responsible people who are passive investing advocates and just, you know, work out some ground rules. Say, look, you know, we don't want to be nasty. We don't want to accuse people of things that, are untrue. However, we do want to have civil discussions, so let's work it out. How can we, you know, how do we do this? How do we do this with respect and affection and a sense of humor? But never have I reached people of influence, and I've tried. Excuse me. Who were willing to get involved and help us do that. So, this question always lurks. Is what we're talking about here, a massive act of financial fraud? And in one sense, it is. To the person whose retirement fails, this is financial fraud, as far as I'm concerned. It's fraud in that the question here is the calculation of a number. There's no dispute but that valuations affect the result. And yet people are being told false numbers, and it goes even beyond that. They're being denied access to the accurate numbers. I don't know how you cannot say that adds up to financial fraud. The greatest act of financial fraud in the history of the United States. The promotion of passive investing from 1981 forward is the greatest act of financial fraud in the history of the United States, says Rob Bennett. Now, I think that's true, but I do want to, my goal is to proceed as responsibly as possible. And so I have to ask myself, that's such a shocking claim. Are you sure, Rob? You sure it's the greatest act of financial fraud? Well, from the standpoint of the investor whose life is ruined because he puts his confidence in these strategies which have been discredited, and he is not warned of this by people who should know, perhaps don't, but should. It's in the literature. Schiller's research is in the literature. And of course, Schiller's research has been confirmed by many others. It's not one person. And the historical data is public information, so anyone who wanted to check it could. So I think it is right to say that there's fraud in terms of the object of the fraud. Where I think fraud is not a good choice of words is when you're looking at the subject of the quote-unquote fraud. The subject are the people advocating passive investing. And the question you have to ask, you know, and I'm not discussing this as a lawyer, but I did go to law school a long time ago, and I'm sure that fraud involves intent. One of the elements of fraud is bad intent. And we have seen much evidence that many of the people advocating passive investing do so believing in it. In other words, it's the strangest kind of fraud that I've ever come across. In that they are making fraudulent claims. They're saying it's safe to take a 4% withdrawal at a time when the historical data says anything beyond 2% is not safe. And yet, they themselves are following the advice they're giving. And there's not one person that I've seen doing this. I've seen hundreds. And I've seen cases where it's just undeniable that that's the case. I mean, John Graney is the leader of the goons. And John Graney was abusive from the first day. You can go back to May 13, 2002, and you'll find an abusive post by John Graney. You know, it was relatively light stuff in the early days, but it was always hostile. Always hostile. There were no death threats, you know, in the beginning. But it was hostile. Always. Always, always. From literally the first day. So, clearly Graney, you know, if you look at that, and you have a reasonable mind, you say he was defensive. In other words, he wasn't saying, "Hey, I'm glad somebody asked that question. What a great question. Here's what I think. Let's all, you know, talk about it. Let's see what we can come up with." That wasn't the attitude. The attitude from the very first moment was, "Let's crush the guy asking that question. That question can destroy me." He's the author of an old school study. So, in that sense, there is motive. In that sense, there's knowledge. There's knowledge. And I believe this is true, really, pretty much across the board, you know, to different degrees. But you can see this, you know, recently we had a, recently there was a video interview with John Bogle that I wrote about at the website, where John Bogle said valuation-informed indexing can work, which I thought was great. That was a great step forward. But he also made this incredible claim where he said, he did not endorse valuation-informed indexing. He said, "I'm too stupid to do it." And that's an incredible claim. Because, first of all, Bogle has issued warnings when stocks are overvalued. If he's capable of knowing when to issue warnings, why wouldn't he be capable of knowing when to lower his stock allocation? Secondly, Bogle did lower his stock allocation at the height of the bull market. He said so in other interviews. So Bogle himself timed the market. So how can he say he's too stupid to know how to do it when he's done it successfully? So, you know, I don't want to say Bogle's in the same camp as John Graney, but in a sense they are. They both are aware that the Achilles heel of passive investing is valuations. They both are keenly aware. And, of course, it's not just those two. Thousands of passive investing advocates are aware of this. They all seem to be aware of it. All of them, really, that I come across. They're aware of it. On the other hand, humans will kill you every time. On the other hand, I believe, with my heart, mind, and soul, John Graney told me he lost well in excess of $1 million in the stock crash. I believe him. It's not like John Graney to make that up. You know, he makes a lot of things up, but he's not going to make up that he lost money. That's not in his nature. I know the guy. If he said it, I believe it on that question. And, of course, he's not the only one. So Graney knows. He knows there's a problem with passive investing. He knows it. He knew from the first day of the discussions. But he follows it. You figure it out. I report the facts. You figure it out. And I believe the same is true of John Bogle. I don't believe that John Bogle is too stupid to follow valuation-informed indexing. I don't think that for 3 seconds. But I think there's some part of John Bogle's mind that says passive investing is better. I personally believe that. I don't know how old he is. I know he's in his 80s. And I saw that video interview. And the guy, I admire work ethic. I admire Bob Dylan. He's out there playing concerts, 100 concerts a year when he's, 68. Bogle's, I don't know what he is, something in his 80s. And the guy is working it. And why? He clearly has enough money, doesn't have to work it. He's doing it out of love. Yeah, he's not in it for the money. So I don't buy, some people are going to get overly cynical and they're going to say, everybody in the stock selling industry is out to screw us over. And I don't think that's true. I do think the money influenced them. It's hard for human beings when they see a particular marketing campaign bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars to say, let's cancel it because this guy put out some academic research showing we're wrong. I think money influenced this, and I think it influenced it in a big way. But I don't think that means that the people doing it get out of bed in the morning saying, I want to screw over the middle class. You can take it so far, and then you have to not take it any farther. People, I believe cognitive dissonance is the big factor that they once believed before the academic research came out, and they so much want to believe that they're not able to let in the realities. So I came up with a phrase to describe that phenomenon, and I call it inadvertent financial fraud. In other words, it is financial fraud in an objective sense. In the sense that we're talking about numbers, the numbers are wrong, the numbers are important, people are using them to plan their retirements, the industry doesn't want them corrected, and the industry will go so far as to support bans on honest posting, even threats of physical violence. The industry, I don't know of any responsible people who have made threats of physical violence, but they sit on their hands. There are responsible, big-name people who participate at Bogleheads and at Vanguard Diehards where there were threats. And they did nothing. So, what I believe is, I feel it's an insult to the people who have been done harm to deny that there was any fraud of any kind. Because people were hurt in big, big, big ways. And, much smaller dollar value cases of fraud have been, headline stuff. So I cannot, in good conscience, deny that there was any kind of fraud that took place. I think it's the biggest act of financial fraud in the history of the United States. However, I don't think in most cases, I can't see into people's minds, but in the cases I have seen up close and personal, I think that the people advocating passive investing are in great pain and in great mental anguish and are suffering cognitive dissonance and are not really capable of thinking clearly. Now, that's why I call it inadvertent financial fraud. That's what it is. And of course, the significance is it's almost worse than if this were real fraud. If it were real fraud, it's worse for the people involved. But real fraud you can beat, because real fraud is always, you're not going to expect large numbers of people to be involved in real fraud. So you can always get the community, a large segment of the community to take action. But when you're dealing with this inadvertent financial fraud where people believe the quote unquote fraudulent statements they're putting forward, how do you get the community to combat it when most investors participate in this fraud and encourage it? It's quite a story. And that's you know, that's the truth. In other words, when you go to a discussion board, what you're seeing is community in action, community dynamics playing out. And the thing that caused the anger and the hate is that I'm never rude. You know, I'm never mean-spirited, but I am blunt. I will say, you know, we've been to these price levels three times in history before this, and the earlier three times we saw a drop of 68%. You know, people should know that. And I'll just make a statement like that, and people blow a fuse. And it's just a fact, you know. It's in Robert Shiller's book, The Introduction. I didn't come up with the fact. I just read it. But you report that fact on a discussion board where people have, you know, 80% of their retirement money in stocks selling at three times fair value, and you cause heart attacks. The significance here really is, what we're really seeing is just how dangerous passive investing is. What I sometimes say is passive investing, it's not an investing theory, it's a disease. Because what it does is it literally incapacitates you. It makes you incapable of rational thought, which is why it sort of makes you incapable of fraud. If you're not capable of rational thought, you know, it's not fraud because there's not bad intent. Passive investing makes us incapable of rational thought. That's how bad it is. So in one sense, this is a discouraging message. On the other, it's highly encouraging because think of what we are capable of if we could overcome it. In 1 year, we could move forward 20 years in our understanding of how stock investing works if we could overcome this, if we could engage in civil and reasoned discussion of the realities of stock investing. Something we obviously can't do so long as 90% of the population is incapable of rational thought on investing. And I will maintain that anyone who believes passive investing can work is incapable of rational thought on investing. I mean, it's a strong statement, but I think the historical record backs it up. So that's the implication. So that's what inadvertent financial fraud is, and that's what it signifies. I've come up with the term to describe something that is so hard to explain that people would get angry at someone who reported the realities of stock investing. Something that helps everyone alive. But the significance is that we have a mountain to overcome in opening up the internet to honest posting. But if we ever overcome that mountain, and I believe we will, the gains are astronomical. The gains are almost, something you can't calculate. So that's where it stands. And as I say, I think we're going to be going to a more political side to this in coming years. Late this year or early next year, I expect to be contacting some political blogs with the hope of getting our findings discussed, with the hope that going outside of the personal finance community, where people get links and people get praise and all this sort of thing by, you know, supporting passive investing, and hopefully get in touch with some people who just don't like the idea of losing all their retirement money and don't like the idea of seeing the U.S. economy destroyed or the U.S. political system, and maybe are more willing to take a look at what the academic research has been showing for a long, long time now. I believe that ultimately where we're going to go with this is, you know, a related sort of question is the question of litigation. A lot of people, I think, are afraid of litigation if they acknowledge the passive investing doesn't work because they have advocated it, or they're afraid socially, that their friends could be sued. And socially, that's, you know, it's sort of like the old story where doctors wouldn't testify against doctors. I think financial planners don't want to testify against financial planners. Michael Kitz has told me that a lot of financial planners are questioning their belief in passive investing, but you have to wonder, what does it mean? If I come forward with a plain statement that passive investing is nonsense and that the academic research has told us this for 28 years, am I going to be able to work in this field in the future? The U.S. government endorsed passive investing. Schroeder pointed me to a page at the SEC site that implicitly endorsed passive investing. John Graney once, he threatened me with the death penalty. You know, he said, by me telling the truth about safe withdrawal rates, I was doing some horrible crime, and, he was going to have me brought to justice, and he said, you know, in my district, I'm going to bring it in my district in Texas, and we have the highest rate of death penalty convictions in the United States. Now, you can laugh at that if you like, and it is laughable, but I just ask you to consider this. Is it laughable? John Graney at one time said, I was the most popular poster at the Motley Fool site the morning of May 13th, 2002. And John Graney, after I reported what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates, and I got a positive reaction in my community, people saying this is the best discussion we've ever had, John Graney said, I am going to get you banned from this board. Was that not an equally laughable claim? But he did it. He did it. And then, of course, he got me banned from you know, many other places in an effort to keep this, you know, covered up. So could he get me the death penalty? I don't think so. But before the stock crash, I can't say that I dismissed it out of hand. I never thought there would have been time. At the Motley Fool board, the rules against abusive posting are as strong as anywhere on the internet. I never thought there would be a time when someone would make a death threat on the Motley Fool board and the owners would fail to take action. And yet that happened. So we're dealing with a very unusual question. I don't think I'm going to get the death penalty. But before the crash, I wouldn't put it at zero. Today, I think too many people have suffered financially for me to get the death penalty solely for having told the truth about the numbers we used to plan our retirements. I don't think it's going to happen today. I don't think a jury would convict me today. But maybe before the crash they would have. I don't know. Some juries on some discussion board sure did. We need to talk frankly about these ethical questions because that's how you clear them up. You see? As long as the dark cloud is hanging over everybody's head, there's sort of a sour taste to all the discussions. Ultimately, you want to clear it up. What I believe, And I think people in the industry would like to clear it up. They'd like to get this behind them. Many people, I believe, in the industry want to tell us the truth about stock investing. I believe that strongly. And you can see it. You can see them drop hints. Bogle does it all the time. Many others do it. Bernstein certainly does it. Scott Burns does it. I think they'd like to tell the truth. They'd like to be free to have discussions about rational investing, I believe. But they clearly fear the social pressure, and I think they even fear litigation, and they fear litigation for others. I think we need legislation that would provide an amnesty for those who have advocated passive investing, an amnesty from litigation. In return, I think the natural return that the public should ask. The public, who has been so harmed by this, should ask in return is that the industry determine how much has been spent in its marketing campaigns, marketing passive investing, and spend an equal amount marketing rational investing. I think that's the legislation we need to overcome this economic crisis. If that were done, I believe, you know, you hear a lot of people say, oh, investors are so emotional. This is the problem. If we spent as much money promoting rational investing as we have spent in the last 30 years promoting passive investing, I don't think investors, middle-class investors, would be emotional. There'd always be some emotion, to be sure, but I think we could reduce the emotional factor by 80-90%. Because most of the emotion comes from the fact, it comes from what we're talking about here, that people are divided. Their common sense tells them price must matter. And yet, they're investing their retirement money based on a quote-unquote belief that it doesn't matter. People are acting against their self-interest on a daily basis because of this, you know, this multi-million dollar marketing campaign that's been directed at them. In other words, every time you invest passively, every time you say the words timing doesn't work or stocks for the long run or buy and hold, you are betraying your common sense. And every time you betray your common sense, you make yourself a more emotional investor. And we're destroying ourselves. We're in the process of destroying our economy. And I think, you know, our political system. Very, very, very. But we can change that. We have the power to change that. And as I say, the power is we sort of have to stand up for ourselves. There's a bit of populism that we need here. Because the industry is just too financially compromised. The rewards of promoting the short-term financial rewards of promoting passive investing are so great that it's a real barrier. But we need to watch that populism remains the good kind of populism and doesn't become the bad kind of populism. What we really want, you know, we don't want to destroy people. We don't want to harm people's reputations. We want people working with us to develop the rational model. That's the goal. We want John Bogle working with us. We want Bill Bernstein working with us. We want Scott Burns working with us. We want Jonathan Clements working with us. We want the Bogleheads.org community working with us. We want the Vanguard Diehards community working with us. We want the Early Retirement Forum working with us. We want IndexUniverse.com working with us. We want Motley Fool working with us. That's the goal. So the goal is, I always describe it as being a mix of love and courage, or love and honesty. We want to insist on the right to discuss honestly how stock investing works. None of this BS. None of the word games that are endemic to the passive investing model. But we want to do that. We want to make that happen. But any sense of retribution in our hearts we want to avoid, because that destroys. That pushes off the day at which we'll see the golden age of middle-class investing. Now, I don't extend, you know, this thought that there's no fraud to the I do extend that to the substantive issues, the question of whether passive investing works or not, because I think there's genuine confusion there. I don't extend that to things like death threats or board bannings or that sort of thing, because those process questions, everyone beyond the kindergarten age knows death threats are wrong and defamation is wrong and you know, intimidation is wrong, and you know, these sorts of things. You know, board bannings are wrong. Ban on honest posting are wrong. So no, I don't extend it to that. I think one of the things we need to change, part of that legislation also needs to be opening the internet up to honest posting, holding site owners liable if they make promises to protect us. They should honor those promises. They should be held liable. Not in cases where they don't know of the abuse of posting, but in cases where it has been brought to their attention that there are death threats being made, they should be required to honor their commitment to us to protect us from these internet predators, I believe. I believe that should all be part of a one big bill on getting us out of this economic crisis, applying the laws of the United States to the internet and you know, the laws of defamation and protection against death threats and this sort of thing, and you know, honoring contracts, honoring promises, and an amnesty from litigation, and a requirement that the stock selling industry spend an equivalent amount, the amount that it has spent promoting passive investing, promoting rational investing, and therefore restoring middle class faith in our stock market and in our economic system and in our political system. So that's what I mean. If you hear me use the phrase inadvertent financial fraud, that's what I'm getting at. I think we have to talk bluntly and we have to say, yes, there was fraud. And yes, this was the greatest act of financial fraud in the history of the United States. But no, the people who perpetuated that fraud were not bad people, certainly not stupid people. And they are people who are in a great deal of pain, people who once believed in an idea that won Nobel Prizes, you know, was endorsed by many, many smart people and many, many good people. And that we need to find a transition for those people to, because the goal here is not retribution. The goal is to lead our economic and political leaders out of the passive investing era into the rational investing era, and to usher in the golden age of middle class investing, and to put this economic crisis behind us. It's not going to happen in a day or a week or a month or probably a year, but I'd like to see it get started. I'd like to see the process speed up in the not too distant future, and perhaps when I start contacting political blogs, we'll start to see some forward motion. Let's see. Let's say a prayer. So those are my thoughts on inadvertent financial fraud. Please, as always, let me know if you have some thoughts of your own. I'd greatly appreciate some feedback, and I'd especially appreciate any thoughts you have on ways to proceed to bring this entire matter to the attention of responsible people, whether they're in the personal finance field or not, because we all should care about the survival of the U.S. economic and political system. It shouldn't be only the people in the stock selling industry that have a say, that have a seat at the table here. This affects everyone. If we enter a second Great Depression, it's not only stockholders who are destroyed financially, the entire country is destroyed, including the stock selling industry, to be sure. So if you know of places where we can go, please let me know. If you have thoughts on ways that we can approach the passive investing advocates and, have a more fruitful discussion, more constructive, positive discussions, let me know about that. Because my job is to get a healing process moving forward. I think we're having some healing. I see that since the crash, and I see it more so in recent months. But it has been slow, friends and neighbors. It's been a painfully slow process. And if there's anything you can do to speed that up, please do it. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.